Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Michael Golden, and Libertarian Kevin Kozlowski. Our program coming to you from our new home base at the Sirius XM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Well, last Friday, the U.S. Department of Labor issued their unemployment report. 533,000 Americans lost their jobs during the month of November. That's the worst job loss in this nation over the last 34 years. And yesterday, in his radio and internet address to the nation, President-elect Barack Obama talked about his economic recovery plan. And here's what that plan calls for. It calls for the creation of 2 million jobs, including the making public buildings more energy efficient, invest in the country's roads and schools, and other specifics call for the single largest new investment in our national infrastructure since the creation of the federal highway system in the 1950s, the installation of energy-saving light bulbs and replacement of old heating systems in federal buildings, which would cut costs and create jobs. The plan would include the expansion of internet access in more communities, and the president-elect summarized it by saying, "We'll measure progress by the reforms we make and the results we achieve, by the jobs we create, by the energy we save, by whether America is more competitive in the world." So Barack Obama taking office next January. Some are saying it's very similar to when FDR took office in 1933 in the wake of the Depression. He, of course, ushered in an era of massive public works. And so the question we ask tonight, are public works projects the best way to jumpstart the economy in 2009? Michael Golden is our Democrat. Michael, nice to have you with us. What's your reaction? Are you real excited about this plan or moderately excited?
I am absolutely excited about it. I think it's going to take a while once it's implemented to see how successful it is. But we've been hearing about this on the campaign trail for more than a year from Barack Obama. And now that he's president-elect, I think a lot of people thought, how difficult would this be to get through the Congress and once the president was in place? But in the last 6 to 8 weeks, we've seen this crisis just escalate to the point where it seems like experts on the conservative and liberal sides of the spectrum are for this. And when it comes to public works, he had said all along that was going to be the case. I think that this is fascinating now because if it's put through at a much higher level financially than would have been possible before the last 2 months of escalating crisis, I think you have an opportunity now to really take on some of those climate change crisis issues at the same time. Some of what you read has to do not just with public works, but with energy efficiency and doing some of the things we haven't done for the last 20 years. So I think it'll be interesting.
Our Republican is Dan Proft. He's a political commentator for WLS, our flagship station, working with Don Wade and Roma in the mornings. Are public works projects the way to do it? It worked for FDR.
No, actually, it didn't work for FDR. FDR's policies upon assuming office actually deepened the recession that he inherited and helped extend the bad economic times in the 30s. I mean, here's the thing. This is the difference between creating work and creating jobs. What Obama's talking about is creating work through wealth transfer. I mean, the government doesn't go in the backyard there at the Capitol and pick money off the money tree, right? When government invests other people's money, it's making a choice that essentially it's smarter than the market. And that crowds out private investment. The real way for long-term sustainable economic growth is to unfetter the private sector in this country. It is not to get government more involved in trying to rectify the problems they largely created, whether you're talking about the credit crunch or the mortgage housing debacle or what have you. This is make work. This is not creating long-term sustainable jobs.
Our libertarian this evening is Kevin Koslowski. He is a construction a project manager working in the industry. Your reaction to the president's concept that public works are going to help turn the economy around?
I guess the one thing that I don't like is the fact that right now in this country we're printing a lot of money. And I guess if we're going to print money, I would rather at least it be spent on infrastructure, something that we're actually going to get something physical out of this. It goes against my my inner nature just to be printing money like this and throwing money at problems. But would I rather see, understanding in a pragmatic sense, that a Democrat's in control? We've got Democrats running the whole show. They're going to do what they're going to do. So I'd rather have them at least spend it on that than just give it to failed business models.
No, but here's the thing. This is not about being opposed to infrastructure spending, but it's about the infrastructure spending's proper role in the larger discussion about what government should and shouldn't be doing. Of course we need to invest in our roads and bridges.
Absolutely.
But the idea that this is the centerpiece of a long-term economic growth strategy is preposterous.
Michael Golden.
At the same time, I understand what Dan is saying, although we differ obviously on ideology. But I think at the same time, there's so much in this country that needs to be rebuilt anyway. I mean, we haven't even talked about the electrical grid. We're talking about roads and bridges and schools. But right in our backyard, and we were talking about before the show, it may not be the entire problem in public education, but a heck of a lot of these schools, not just in Chicago, but in inner city areas throughout the country, need to be rebuilt anyway and have been given short shrift by either state or city budgets that couldn't afford it. And a lot of this money that's going to be coming from the federal government is going to be filtered through the states and to municipalities. And as a matter of fact, the president-elect has already said that if the money is not used efficiently, quickly by these state governments, that it'll move to other states. So I think that it's already shoring up a problem we already have, and at the same time putting people back to work where right now incomes have dropped over the last 8 years, and that's why this whole credit crisis, people can't pay for consumer products right now. It's a vicious spiral, and I think until you get some of those 1.9 million jobs back, just some of them, you're not going to see the markets come back, and we're not going to see consumer spending increase.
Kevin.
But on the education spending, how much of that money is actually going to go to bricks and mortar, and how much is it going to go to paying teacher salaries and actually to jobs that are already recession-proof? And right now, you look at this money we spend on education that's supposed to be for education, and
he was focusing on building the buildings. I think it was bricks and mortar. I mean, I think a lot of people would not like to see, frankly, more money going into the schools as well, because I think there's some basic people, I think, would understand that if there are leaky pipes and the air conditioning doesn't work and some infrastructure-related things to a building are not working, it makes it harder for the educational system.
But this is missing the forest for the trees. This is the whole point. You're going to have a discussion about education, and it's going to be about what kind of light bulbs are in the hallways? Wait a second. The 18 of the top 50 most populous urban centers in this country have public high school graduation rates under 50%. Detroit's is under 25%. You want to talk about doing something about education, crumbling education in the system, talk about the output, not talk about the buildings.
I want to talk about both. I'll talk about both when we come back. 1-800-723-8020. What do you feel about, or how do you feel about the public works projects? Is that what we need to jumpstart the economy? 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont.
This is Tom Castor, VP of Banquet Foods. Recently, we launched new Banquet Select recipes. At only about $1.50, they've been hard to keep in freezers. Then came the letters. This one from Jane M. My husband really enjoyed your enchiladas and red sauce, chicken and beef. Wow. But when I told him the price, he went into shock. I actually had to slap him. Sure, I enjoyed it, but maybe there should be a disclaimer. Well, think about it, Jane. And thanks for the letter. New Banquet Select recipes. So good for so little.
Vehicular stereotypes are ugly and hurtful. Take the SUV. It says, I'm into strip mining and deforestation, but my real passion is shoveling my life savings into a blast furnace. Or consider the hybrid. It says, I have concern for the environment and a visceral hatred of anything fun. See how hurtful stereotypes are. Sidestep them with a 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper. With the best car fun footprint on the road, it's fun to drive and environmentally responsible. Now get zero down, zero deposit on a 2009 Mini Cooper lease. Go to MiniUSA.com/FS for details. EPA estimate with manual transmission mileage varies.
From Sacramento, California to Springfield, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8229. We will go to calls in just a moment, but I want to sort of expand on what we were talking about before the break, and that is, you know, this money is going to for public works projects to build new schools. I guess I would argue, I agree with you to some extent. It is the quality of the teachers. It's the quality of the educational experience that will result in hopefully better educated students. But I don't think you can disagree with, at least I think some basics, is that the building that you go in to learn, if government, if taxpayers, if society doesn't respect that building and respect the students by inviting them into a building that doesn't have the basics, the basic elements of even office space, I mean, why would a student want to go to that school?
Well, first of all,
isn't it one of the enticements?
Well,
I mean, people go to new baseball stadiums because they just want to see the new baseball park.
Wait,
if you have a new school, if you're building a beautiful new school, wouldn't one of the enticements might be to students that, hey, it's a nice place to go, especially if they're coming from lower income families where maybe, you know, they live in horrible conditions?
Well, I mean, I would say two things to that. Number one is, even if that were true, it's not the federal government's responsibility. Education is a state issue. Number two, I would say that those urban centers, it's not a recruitment problem because you're forced to go to your neighborhood school. So whether that school is the Taj Mahal or whether it's dilapidated and doesn't have the basic necessities you need, in our current climate in places like Chicago and Philadelphia, New York, L.A., you're forced to go to the school by your geography, not by your choice. So recruiting is not the problem for these big urban public school systems.
Michael Golden.
Yeah, but Bruce's point, setting aside recruitment and the school choice issue, which you're sort of flirting with now, and I can understand.
I'm more than flirting
right,
with
I know. I can understand that. But what Bruce is saying is the whole point that they don't have a choice in a lot of these areas makes it even more important that these schools are actually functioning, that there are – you're making one of the energy-efficient light bulbs. A lot of them don't even have light bulbs. I mean, if you've seen in the west and south side of Chicago, some of those Chicago public schools, they are in dire need of repair. And it would seem to me that that's the first thing you want to do, as Bruce said, before they even walk in the door and you talk about issues of instruction and professional
development. But you have to acknowledge that, I mean, to Dan's point, it isn't just a beautiful building.
Of course not. Of course not.
But again, there's some basic things. I mean, my position has always been, if you've listened to this show for a long time, any investment that does not start with education, I think, is a lower priority. Everything that we do as a nation, as a country, should start with education.
Well, you know I agree about that.
Start as early as possible.
You know I agree about that all the way, early childhood, all the way through post-secondary, which is, as you know, is what I do. But I think, like you're saying, this is the first impression that parents and kids get of schools is how the school is functioning just from a foundation perspective before you get into all of these other issues, which are much, much deeper. And as long as we need to fix all those schools, why not put people to work to do it?
Go ahead.
But to your point, Bruce, and to your point too, Michael, look, I'm not against building new schools. I'm not against schools that accommodate the basic needs of students so they have a productive learning environment. But it's a hierarchy of needs issue too, right, because there's limited resources. So let's, for once, how about we start by investing in the actual students as opposed to the bureaucracy, the unions, the administrative overhead, and the buildings?
Give us a specific. When you say invest in the students, what do you mean by that?
That's a slippery slope there.
What I mean by it specifically is that the money follows the student. Is that invest in students, meaning empower the students to choose to not go to the dilapidated school that doesn't educate kids if they happen to be born in a neighborhood where that's the school of choice. Empower them and empower their families to choose a better alternative. And to do that means the money is tied to the student. It is not tied to the institution. It's not tied to the bureaucracy. It's not tied to the building.
Kevin, what do you think of that idea?
You know, I'm a supporter of vouchers. As a libertarian, I mean, it's actually the libertarians that really took the issue on the forefront back in the 70s. And when they brought it forward, it was Ed Poole was one of the gentlemen that brought it forward. People thought it was a crazy idea. Now you have Democrats actually talking about the idea. And let's take another step forward. Barack Obama, where are his daughters going to school? They're going to school in a private school, and because he doesn't have the courage that Jimmy Carter did to put his daughters in the Washington D.C. public school system. So I think he
cares about their education.
There's an open admission that we have serious problems, especially in the inner cities. I mean, I grew up in Wheaton. Dan and I both went to Wheaton schools. Dan actually went to high school in Naperville. But, you know, we're very fortunate. He went to a private school. I went to public schools. Both schools were excellent. I'm going to send my kids to Wheaton public schools. Would I send my kids to Chicago inner city public schools? Probably not. And it's sad that that's the case. But, you know, some of these kids in these inner cities get more money per student than Wheaton kids do.
Let's follow through. Why would you not send them to a public school? Well, let's role play here.
In Chicago, it matters where it's at. I'll make the decision geographically. In Chicago right now, there are some select schools that are, you know, college prep schools and have great programs, and that's fine. But I've also I've been in some of these schools. Every year I deliver gifts through the Sun-Times Season of Sharing program. I drop the gifts off at the schools. I've walked in some of these schools, and you know what? It's scary, and it's sickening that these kids have to walk into a classroom like this where paint's peeling on the walls. Some of them look like prisons. And how do you expect to take a child from day one and put them in that environment and expect them to turn out to be productive human beings?
So some of it is related to the infrastructure.
Some of it is.
It isn't just the quality of the teachers or the fact that gangs may be running rampant in that particular school.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we could talk about K-12 education for 3 hours here. The Gates Foundation just 3 weeks ago unveiled a strategy they've been working on for a year, taking all of this on and the study and the data and the evidence they're collecting to try to find out, whether vouchers works, what's the best way to move public education forward, how early does it start. All of these things we could discuss this for hours, but I don't think there's anything wrong, as Bruce says, with starting at square one and what Kevin's talking about in terms of building and providing places of learning that are technologically advanced and are welcoming, as you say, to students and that actually function.
But can I give you one telling statistic about CPS, or Chicago Public Schools, which I know the most about? Thomas Fordham Institute did a study in 2004. It found that 4 in 10 Chicago public school teachers send their kids to private schools. So these are people in the system every day. They're choosing to send their kids at a 4 in 10 clip to private schools. That tells you something, that they know something maybe everybody else doesn't.
You know, one other thing, and then we're going to take a call, but again, when Barack Obama talked about, change, one thing that I've referenced it on this program a number of times over the last 10 years, and that is, have we reached a point, we're in the 21st century, that we look at the role of the school, we look at the role of the library in the community, and we look at the role of the recreation center in a community, especially a community where obesity or a country where obesity, childhood obesity, is a major problem. Maybe we don't need to build new libraries. Maybe we have to build more schools with libraries in them, so that maybe we should have better gymnasiums in schools, so we don't have to then spend more money in another sector called park districts where we're building recreation centers. Why can't there be one element, one unit of a community where all of these things are going forward? It seems to me there's duplication and triplication of effort in how we spend our money because of the politics and frankly just sort of the tradition that you have to have a school and you have to have a library and you have to have the rec center. I'm saying let's go to a blank slate. Let's rethink the concept. And let's take a telephone call. Let's go to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where Aaron is listening to us on KELO. Nice to hear from South Dakota tonight. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
I just wanted to weigh in on that subject there. From my peer experience, whenever the federal government gets involved in things, I was in Katrina, went down there and helped in the cleanup, and the billions of dollars of waste that happened down there were, 2.5 years later, and the cleanup is still, they haven't only done about 20-25% of the homes, and the waste that is opened up when the federal government gets into those kind of programs is horrible.
What was the specific waste that you saw, a story that you can share with us right now?
Well, I was the contractor, and I was what they called a fourth-tier contractor. There were three contractors above me I was contracted under. I had all the equipment and all the people outdoing the job. I had all the real financial money being spent, and I got one-fourth of the money that was going to do that job. The others all took a fourth of that money just for shuffling paper back and forth. The job could have been done for $8 a yard, but it cost the federal government over $32 a yard. If you would have went to the homeowner and gave that homeowner money to clean it up, he would have gone around and gotten bids and gotten it done for a fraction of what the federal government paid, and it's still not done down there. And if you, we got a perfect example of the bailout. How much of that money has actually gone for the bailout and is helping people? It's going into the big people who know how to waste it and take advantage of our hard-earned.
Well, it was supposed to go to banks to make mortgages, and banks aren't making a lot of mortgages, Michael.
Well, and also there has been very little transparency with what they've done with the half of that $700 billion. Nobody knows. Now, I'm sure that that's absolutely true. We watched what happened in New Orleans. We watched what happened with the terrible coordination between local authorities and the federal government. We watched terrible administration over what needed to be done down there. I would say that you have a new administration coming in. That may not solve the problem of waste coming from a federally managed program, but I think it'll be run a little differently than it was under the Bush administration.
We've got a break. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Vehicular stereotypes are ugly and hurtful. Take the SUV. It says, I'm into strip mining and deforestation, but my real passion is shoveling my life savings into a blast furnace. Or consider the hybrid. It says, I have concern for the environment and a visceral hatred of anything fun. See how hurtful stereotypes are. Sidestep them with a 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper. With the best car fun footprint on the road, it's fun to drive and environmentally responsible. Now get zero down, zero deposit on a 2009 Mini Cooper lease. Go to MiniUSA.com/FS for details. EPA estimate with manual transmission mileage varies.
Do you suffer from cold sores? Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relieve and find out for yourself if Relieve works really fast for you. Relieve is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relieve now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
From Bakersfield, California to St. Joe, Michigan, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Let's go to another call. Edward is listening to us on our flagship station, WLS in Chicago. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. What we need is a nuclear plant in every state, and that's going to create more jobs. And I hope Mr. Obama talks about Medicare and Social Security, because I haven't heard anything about that either.
Well, he's got a number of things to think about. I mean, what about the building of nuclear plants, Dan Proft?
Yeah, I mean, it's clean energy. It's efficient. I mean, Illinois actually is one of the states that has more. I think we have more nuclear power plants than almost any other state. So, I mean, Illinois is a state that has embraced nuclear power historically. It's a NIMBY problem, but, I mean, nuclear power has certainly got to be part of the energy independent solution.
Oh. Michael Golden?
Not an expert on nuclear power. They've talked about it a little bit during the campaign, but I think the larger point is that everything is on the table right now, because in my lifetime, we've never had a situation like this when it comes to energy, when it comes to the economy, when it comes to international relations, and I think that everything is on the table after the last 10 weeks.
Common sense here. Changing light bulbs in existing federal buildings versus creating job and saving energy versus spending money to build nuclear power plants in the future. Isn't the latter a much better idea?
Well,
it's a little more real. It's a little more serious approach.
I think it's a matter of degree. I don't think it's an either-or proposition. I think, and we'll probably talk about the auto companies later, but I think that one of the only real way I think that the climate change crisis is going to be on a track towards solution is if this country, the United States, leads other countries. I don't think that the international community is going to come together on a lot of these things unless the United States leads, and I think that the only way to do that is it begins with federal policy, not individuals. It's just too difficult.
Before we take another call, I want to come back to sort of where we were, you know, 12 minutes ago on this program, and that is the issue of let's focus on one of these challenging areas that the president-elect has talked about, and that is this education crisis, because you have the issue of the buildings, which Dan is a little less concerned about than others, but I think everybody would agree that the quality of the education, the ultimate product being hopefully an educated student, is a goal. So focus on that. As a libertarian, where would you direct? And you, I know you don't want government to be involved in anything, but where would you direct some of the government money that's going to be going there, whether you like it or not?
I guess if the money's going to be spent and I don't have a choice to where it goes. I think early childhood development is important. I mean, right now, if you look at 20 years ago, we had the same issue. 40 years ago, we had the same problem, and we had the Great Society programs as a result. And they were miserable failures. But right now, how can you expect somebody from the plan from 40 years ago or 20 years ago? Those people are having kids now, and they're still victims of those programs, and they're still victims of these horrible lives they live, and it's so depressing. And they're having children, and they're trying to raise these kids in those situations, and there's bullets flying all over in their neighborhoods. Kids, you know, talking about childhood obesity, these kids don't feel safe to go out in their neighborhoods and play in the street.
So they don't go out, they don't play in the streets. We're coming back to parents having too many children. We've got too many children.
No.
Too many kids having too many kids.
Well, yeah.
Isn't that it?
Yes.
Isn't that part of the problem?
Illegitimacy, and particularly at a young age, is a huge part of the social problem. There's no doubt about that.
All right. How do you stop that? How do you – I mean, we're coming to be – it's the chicken or the egg. Where do you break into this circle? Because if you don't, it seems to me you've got to track it back to illegitimate pregnancy.
Well, that's a big part of the problem, particularly when it's at, you know, 2/3 in the black community, about 40% overall and on the rise. I mean, it's a huge, huge problem. The problem is the federal government is not the solution. The federal government cannot raise a family, cannot raise a child. It never has. It never will. But I think what the federal government can do, if I were president, you know, kind of back to your question, if I were president, what would you do on the education front? Realizing the federal government's role should be particularly limited. Really, it should have no role. But because we spend $40 billion a year on primary and secondary education from the federal government, if we're going to spend the money, here's what I would do. Number one, I'd repeal No Child Left Behind. Number two, I'd use the money to make sure that we live up to our mandate that we have for special education students. And number three, I agree with Kevin that you would push money to the states for early childhood development.
You mentioned No Child Left Behind. Kevin is listening to us driving in the car, heading towards Springfield, Illinois. And you've got a question. Go ahead, Kevin.
Actually, it's Kelly, but that's all right.
Kelly, I'm sorry.
Wow, I've been listening for about 20 minutes now. I don't even know where to start. But I think you kind of addressed it. Did I hear right that he said he would repeal No Child Left Behind or
yes.
get rid of it?
Yes.
Okay, I'm pretty much in agreement with that. Are you guys solely focusing on the education thing, or can we bring up other things?
No, you can bring up other things. I mean, we're talking about
a
variety of things that the president-elect has referenced as recently as yesterday.
Well, I think he's probably inheriting a bigger mess than any president before him. So hopefully people will be patient for he's only got 4 years to try and get things on the roll to, you know, on the road to recovery. But my question is, I was kind of wondering what the panel thought about the proposed bailout for the auto industry. And my problem with the bailout for the auto industry was that, you know, in 1997, GM, of course, had the EV1, which was the first electric car, I think, in the world that was produced on any kind of mass level. They simply abandoned the project for whatever reason, and there's theorists out there that think they just did it because they were able to and didn't want to continue it when they could sell cars that used gas, when gas was still $1 a gallon in 97 at $30 a barrel for oil. But do you think that taxpayer money should be fronted for these companies to continue?
Stay on the line. Let's let everybody respond to that, but stay on the line so you can do a follow-up. Michael Golden.
Sure. Okay.
I actually think this is a fascinating question. And from what members of Congress are saying, it's 60-40 from their constituents against doing this bailout, even though now members of Congress are coming toward making that decision. Under ordinary circumstances, if we weren't talking about needing to increase energy efficiency and lead, as I said, as a country amongst other countries on this issue, and if we weren't facing 1.9 million people in the last year who have lost their jobs and a lot more coming in the very near future, I might think, you know what, let it go down. Dog eat dog. There is no reason for federal dollars to be put into this. But I think that if the federal government does not give the auto companies a bridge loan for a few months to see if they can restructure in any way, shape, or form, it'll be disastrous for the economy. We started the show by talking about consumer spending, the lack thereof. Next month, I think it is going to be very, very dark during the holidays, and the market is going to decrease again. If 2 to 3 million jobs are lost in the next few months because of those auto companies, and I talked to someone this afternoon, a plastics manufacturer, who said if those companies go down, me and three of my competitors immediately go down. There is a ripple effect, and the timing of it is terrible right now. But I think the only way the government should do this is if they put provisos in place that those auto companies need to follow guidelines to start making the cars, and they've begun, much more energy efficient. If they cannot change the way they make those automobiles, then there's no reason for the big three to survive.
Kevin Kozlowski, let's get your response.
The mandates on the auto industry to produce certain types of vehicles is fairly unrealistic because some of it's relying upon science that doesn't exist yet. And to mandate technologies doesn't work. I mean, the Soviets tried it repeatedly, and it just doesn't work. If the technologies exist, they'll be profitable, they'll get implemented, and then we'll see them. In response to the battery vehicle from 1997, yeah, it was around. Gas was cheap, and it didn't make sense. Right now, though, the electric vehicle looks like it's going to be a requirement, and there's a lot of possibility for it. That's going to couple itself with nuclear technology, which we're going to have. We're going to need nuclear plants. Getting back to that, but the bailout of the auto industry, I think Congress has to have the courage, not the president, because power in this country is really with the Congress, and people forget that, and we give too much credit and too much blame to the presidents.
I agree.
Newt Gingrich understood this. And but right now, with the bailout, I hope Congress has the courage to demand a packaged bankruptcy if they're going to give a bridge loan. And if they don't have the courage to demand a packaged bankruptcy, they're literally just handing them money that's going to get thrown away.
Then they're
going to be back asking for more. But the packaged bankruptcy is the only way that they're going to find a sustainable business model. The problem and the reason why I don't think they have the courage to do it is because the unions, the Democrats are beholden to the unions right now. And a package bankruptcy is going to allow the auto manufacturers to restructure the union agreements.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, I think Kevin's right, and I'll take a couple other points on this. Look, the idea, and Obama said the same thing, similar things to what Michael said on Meet the Press today, talking about they need energy-efficient cars and they need to change the products they produce and so forth. Look, they're upside down right now. Even if they produced every car that Barack Obama wants to see him produce tomorrow, and even if they were gangbusters, the structural problem is that their average worker is $30 or 25% higher, about $30 more an hour than their foreign competitors. They've got 4.6 legacy retirees per every active worker, so the legacy costs are immense, and you cannot get out from underneath.
Given the heat, the 60-40 heat, all the talk show conversations about the automobile companies, and the way in which even the president-elect is basically saying to Detroit, hey, you got to clean up your act. I mean, he's using the bully pulpit that he has to try to get their attention. Do they deserve one more shot?
Well, it's not about them deserving one more shot. The discussion to me, the thing that's crazy to me is the discussion it kind of belies the structural problem with the industry, at least as the way the big three have chosen to try and compete. What we're talking about is saying, you know, the problem is not a structural problem. It's like the Soviet Union. If we said the problem is we just have the wrong guys on the Politburo. It's not a structural problem. We just need to replace the Politburo. Wrong. It's a structural problem the way that those companies are set to compete. If you go into a structured bankruptcy like Kevin was talking about, maybe we end up with one big automaker or two big automakers in this country and not three. But to throw money at this problem, which is essentially what Congress is talking about doing, is absolutely absurd. Will not change the structural problems.
1-800-723-8029. I promise back to your calls when we roll on from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont from Border to Border and Coast to Coast. Every Sunday night.
Believe me, I'm a guy who likes to get his money's worth. That's why I'm gaga over Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. I get my money's worth because Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes gives me soothing comfort that lasts up to 8 hours. Why does it last so long? Because it stays in your eyes, that's why. The soothing moisturizers in Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes are specially formulated to stay put. They're the no-drip drops. For up to 8 hours of soothing comfort, get Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. Use as directed.
Vehicular stereotypes are ugly and hurtful. Take the SUV. It says, I'm into strip mining and deforestation, but my real passion is shoveling my life savings into a blast furnace. Or consider the hybrid. It says, I have concern for the environment and a visceral hatred of anything fun. See how hurtful stereotypes are. Sidestep them with a 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper. With the best car fun footprint on the road, it's fun to drive and environmentally responsible. Now get zero down, zero deposit on 2009 Mini Cooper lease. Go to MiniUSA.com/FS for details. EPA estimate with manual transmission. Mileage varies.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Ron listening to us on WLS Radio in St. Joe, Michigan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bruce. Bruce, first of all, panelist there, he said that he didn't get anything out of the Great Society. We got the Civil Rights Movement. We got Head Start, which he was railing that he wants to see more daycare centers. That's where it all got its start, okay? Those are just two things that we got from the Great Society. And also, the one guy was saying that we don't have parity with the other automakers. That's right. That's because the UAW has to pay for health care benefits that all the other auto manufacturers, Japan and Europe, they get paid for by their federal governments. Or or we could take the scab companies that don't pay the benefits, but they are parity in wages because the UAW is breathing down their necks. And, you know, the two Republicans there, they always said since Reagan that starved the infrastructure, starved the middle class, and this is what we've got by all the starvation, right, buddies? But you know what? Obama wants to put the unions back in to rebuild those schools and to get good jobs, and that's what's going to take this country out of the depression that you Republicans dragged us into, buddies.
Dan Proft.
I forgot. That was Reagan's tagline, actually, was starve the middle class, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yeah.
Morning in America, starve the middle class.
Right. This is look, first of all, I'm not against the building trades unions. I work with some of them in my professional life, okay? But I also don't appreciate, you know, the typical hysteria that comes from, you know, Rosie Riveter over here talking about things that happen to not be true. The bottom line is that UAW, the unions, the way that the auto industry has been managed, the desire for protectionism in addition to federal subsidies every time there's a problem, ultimately those costs, all those things that were sown are now being reaped. And kind of do the class envy stuff and to blame Republicans and to say that one side is for the middle class and one side isn't, it really is silly, and it shows that somebody who's not interested in an actual debate about what we should do now that we're in this crisis and how we got here so we don't make the same mistakes.
It's not silly. And you're the one who got us into this here, and there's no more debate.
Me? Really? What did I do? What did I do? I'm the one who got you here? What did I do?
Your propaganda through the Heritage Institute that spread all these lies about the working class, about unions.
Look,
and you're going to continue to do it, but you know what?
Look,
it is
not a lie. Look, whether somebody should make $75 an hour or should make $48 an hour, that's not what I'm weighing in on. The reality is that a line worker at Toyota makes $48 an hour. A line worker at GM makes $72, $73 an hour. That, you know, that's the input into the product. That puts GM at a competitive disadvantage in terms of a huge cost being their labor cost relative to Toyota and some of the automakers. That's a reality. Now, you can say whether that should be or shouldn't be the case, what we should do about it, but that's a reality that needs to be confronted and discussed. We pretend like it doesn't exist, or we pretend that if somebody highlights that they're somehow anti-labor, anti-working class. Not the case.
Well, you know what? You know as well as I do it is because somebody has to pick up those health care costs. Somebody has to pick up those pension benefits. And what are they going to do? They're going to look to the stock market for it, perhaps?
Kevin's got a comment. By the way, he is a libertarian. He does not answer to the question or to the title Republican. Go ahead.
You know, as a proud former member of Labor's Local 96, you know, I look at the issues with the unions in America right now, and one thing from a freedom perspective, I fully support the unions' rights to collectively bargain. I mean, it's very important because everybody has the right as an individual to pull together, pull their efforts together, and collectively bargain.
Let's go to Bob in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN. You're an auto worker, right? UAW?
Hey, yeah. Hey, Bruce, I'm one of the most hated guys in this country.
Yeah, you're very popular.
Yeah, I'm very popular. But what I'm...
Are you calling from your estate somewhere?
Oh, yeah. What I wanted to say, I worked for Chrysler in 1980. We had a loan. We paid it back. But what I'm saying is I'm willing to bet, you know, I'm a taxpayer, too, auto worker. We paid a lot of heavy taxes in our lifetimes. We're taxpayers. I guess that's some of our money down there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now. And we paid more taxes than I'll bet you 40% of those people who are against us paid in their lifetime. And we're in a bad situation. Okay, and what gets me, I'll tell you what really burns me, is this media is coming down on us hard. They didn't come down on the bankers and the credits and the stock market because I can understand the commentators got some money invested in the 401k, and that money was going toward that. But when the money goes, there's Wall Street, Main Street. And when it goes to Wall Street, nothing's said. When it goes to Main Street, we get all this baloney, all this. I don't know. It just seems like
why in your view, Bob, are the public opinion polls running 60-40 against the bailout? Why is there so much frustration? And I guess the question I would ask to put a finer point on it, I mean, why can you build a car so much cheaper in Georgia and South Carolina than you can in Ohio and in Michigan? Part of it is the union deals in those two states. It costs almost $2,000 more to build a car in Michigan than it does in South Carolina. The average person looks at that and says, why? You're doing the same job.
Well, here's the way it goes. Now, those guys down south, the mention of even union, you remember the Civil War?
I do. It was in all the history books. I remember it.
You mention the word union, then you're out of business anyway, right? All you got to do is mention union.
Well, what's the answer to the question?
Well,
you're building a car, and the people in Ohio and Michigan are getting paid a lot more money to build it than the people in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi. How come? That's the question. That's one of the frustrations. Bob, I've got to say farewell right now because we're running into our news break, 1-800-723-8289. If you're watching us on television, we want to thank Michael Golden for being with us and Kevin Kozlowski. And also our Republican tonight, Dan Proft. They will all be back for hour number two. That is, if you were listening to us and watching us on radio, or listening to us on radio, if you're watching us on radio, we look terrific. For those of you who are watching us on television, we're going to say farewell to you. And for the radio folks, stay right where you are. Phone lines remain open. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
OnStar Emergency, this is Judy.
Hi, I just had an accident and I need an ambulance, please.
Are you injured?
I think I'm okay. I'm just scared. I'm pregnant. I'm 8 months.
Okay, I'm going to get the 911 centers on the line.
911.
My name is Judy with OnStar. Going to need police and medical at Cal and Nellis. My subscriber's been involved in an accident.
I'll get help out to you.
I should call my husband. I can't find my cell phone.
You can't always rely on a cell phone to be within reach, especially after a crash. But OnStar is built in and can automatically connect you to an advisor.
You want me to call him for you?
Will you please?
Hello, is this Eddie?
Yeah.
It's Judy with OnStar. I'm going to bring you on to speak with your wife.
Are you okay?
I'm just scared.
Baby, I'm on my way.
Built-in automatic crash response helps protect millions of OnStar subscribers. And if you're looking for a new car, you'll find it standard for the first year on 14 Chevy models. Visit your local Chevy dealer or OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
You know, I always appreciate it when someone goes the extra mile. And that's why I love those folks who make Clear Eyes eye drops. They put an extra moisturizing ingredient in every Clear Eyes product in the entire line, even their redness formula.
And I get up to 8 hours of soothing comfort, an extra moisturizer and up to 8 hours of soothing comfort. Thank you, Clear Eyes people, wherever you are. Use as directed.
Who's always there for you? Your mum? Maybe, yeah, but sometimes she's a bit chatty with you. Oi, when are you going to get a girlfriend business? Now, GEICO, they're always there for you. They have been for over 70 years. They insure over 8 million policyholders, and their customer satisfaction is at 97%. With GEICO service, no wonder it's the third largest automobile insurance company. Your mum might cook better, but everything else, it's a very close call.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
I'm Errol Squires, inventor of Relieve One-Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment. I invented Relieve because I wanted a very effective, natural treatment for cold sores that worked really fast. Relieve works so well and so fast for me, my family, and friends, I wanted to help other people who suffer from cold sores. I think people are smart enough to know if something works. If you suffer from cold sores, try Relieve and find out if it works for you. Relieve is comprised of botanical extracts and is guaranteed. Buy Relieve now at all major stores.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy. And it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Dan Proft, Democrat Michael Golden, and Libertarian Kevin Kozlowski. Our program coming to you from our home base, the Sirius XM studio in Chicago on the city's Great West Side, where our phone lines are open toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And we're talking in this hour, we're going to be talking about the economic crisis that the nation faces. We're going to be talking, you know, the UAW and the debate over Detroit and whether or not the big three automobile makers should be bailed out. There's been a lot of discussion about the United Auto Workers and whether or not they as a union are causing some of the problems that those companies have. So we're going to be talking about that. And unions have been taking a hit from time to time on this broadcast. And Kevin Kozlowski, during our break, we thank you very much for joining us, our libertarian tonight. You're also a project manager in the construction industry when you're not on the radio sharing your political views. You were making some points about labor unions, that there may be a ticking time bomb out there that labor unions may not have taken time to realize is out there. Put that on the table for us.
I guess the one thought I've had when I've thought about the possibility that we may have a nationalized healthcare system in this country is the fact that it actually may have a trickle-down effect and actually be a tool to break the labor unions, and the construction labor unions in this country. Business unions are different. Like a GM, an auto worker works for GM, doesn't necessarily work for the union. Their benefits package isn't with the union at a GM like it is with a construction trade. So the thing is, as a businessman, working with the unions, the unions provide a benefit to me by allowing their workforce to carry with them a portable benefits package. And if the healthcare portion of that package is taken away, right now there may not be that much of an incentive for me as a businessman to still want to work with the unions. And it could be the death knell to the construction labor unions in this country.
Your response to that, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point. I think there's actually some validity to it. We were talking a little bit about it in the break, and you kind of play that out, and it makes some sense. I think the other thing, though, too, from the callers in the last hour, a little bit, this is not necessarily – this is not about anti-union or anti-guys that put their 30 years in at UAW and want the pension that they said they were going to get. I understand that people don't want promises broken, particularly when they're in retirement and they counted on that money that they paid into the system all those years and those contracts that were free and fairly negotiated. But that doesn't obviate the reality. So is there blame on the executive side? Yes. Is there blame on the labor side? Yes. Do a lot of Republicans like myself support the Wall Street guys that got bailed out too? No, we don't. We're saying the same things across the board. But you see a lot of small businesses, why we talked about before 60-40 against this bailout and why there's a lot of people against this. Because a lot of other small business owners or regular folks that go about their workaday lives, when they make a mistake or when they negotiate a bad contract or when they have a supplier that goes out of business or a vendor that goes out of business, then, you know, the government isn't riding in on the white horse to bail them out. So why are the rules of the game different for some people on Wall Street or Main Street and not for and different for everybody else in between?
Michael Golden is our Democrat. Your response.
I see what you're saying. Absolutely. And I think, I mean, if you go back to the numbers in terms of for and against on the bailout before the auto bailout, the financial bailout, at first constituents were 20-1 calling their congressmen against this.
Right.
Until the market took another 1,000-point tumble and then it cut to 4-1 and they passed it like that. And the problem is it's not mutually exclusive. You can't do the kind of bailout they did with the financial industry and try to thaw the frozen credit markets without helping a heck of a lot of people, not just executives, but consumers who acted irresponsibly. You can't pull that all apart, unfortunately. And it is unfortunate because a lot of people who are doing things the right way and not taking on unnecessary risk, they're kind of getting screwed.
Right. And so my point is in this larger discussion, whatever we end up doing, because something will be done. But the part of the discussion that's missing here in this crisis period is what are the rules of the game going to be going forward so we don't find ourselves in this place again in 5 years or 10 years or 25 years?
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Doug listening to us on XM Radio. Nice to have you with us tonight.
Good evening, sir. And I just want to make this real quick with you, make a point about your schooling and your education and putting money out there to improve the schools and the educational system on a basis of a psychology.
By the way, that for those that just tuned in, that was a discussion we had earlier in the broadcast, and it was in response to President-elect Barack Obama's desire to spend a significant amount of public works dollars to improve and build new schools around the United States. So go ahead.
Yes, sir. To put it simply, I realize that you gentlemen there probably go to a very nice office every day. Now, if you want to put it back into schools, you take a child that goes into a room that, like the one gentleman said, the paint is peeling off the walls, and then you take another child that goes into a nice, brand-new technological school that has the computers, the teachers, and so on and so forth. Which child do you think is actually going to perform better? It's the one that is going to be in the nicer schools. The reason I deal with this is because back in my hometown of Mishawaka, Indiana, we did this. As parents, we went into the schools and we changed the schools. The test scores rose dramatically. The other part is I work with foreign exchange students that come into this country, into our high schools, for host families to, you know, to let them live with us for a year. And every single one of these foreign exchange students walk in and say, how and why am I taking classes in a senior class in high school that I took 6 years ago? Our educational system is so far behind the times. It's time we spent the money, which, by the way, when you spend the money, somebody gets that money and spends it again. Helping the economy out.
Well, that's Doug. That's why I say that any dollar not spent on education is a waste. Michael Golden, you spend a lot of your time. You're primarily at the college and the community college level. But let's backtrack and answer Doug's question. Respond to it.
Well, yeah, and we talked a little bit about this earlier. There's no question that building institutions that are conducive to learning is the first step. Now, obviously, that doesn't speak to instruction and professional development and testing and all the other issues in public education, setting aside the choice issue for the moment, that are critical. I can tell you that I'm excited about what's going on with this public works program because also they're going to need to train the next workforce. And as you know, the Illinois Education Foundation employs the community college system, perfect for this station, Channel 20,
right.
In all kinds of critical skill shortage areas where the labor pool is not qualified enough, whether it's the nursing shortage or hospitality or transportation or in manufacturing. Not just in Chicago, there are places all over the state. Manufacturers who don't have a qualified enough labor pool, and the community college system was actually built for that reason 100 years ago, to take local communities and get these students through. We're trying to help more of them, and I think this administration is going to be big on post-secondary education and associate's degrees at these two-year schools that help more people get out into the labor force, no matter what the job is.
We're going to pause, 1-800-723-8029. More calls, a lot more calls on the line. Bring them into the conversation when we roll on from Chicago.
Vehicular stereotypes are ugly and hurtful. Take the SUV. It says, I'm into strip mining and deforestation, but my real passion is shoveling my life savings into a blast furnace. Or consider the hybrid. It says, I have concern for the environment and a visceral hatred of anything fun. See how hurtful stereotypes are. Sidestep them with the 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper. With the best car fun footprint on the road, it's fun to drive and environmentally responsible. Now get zero down, zero deposit on a 2009 Mini Cooper lease. Go to MiniUSA.com/FS for details. EPA estimate with manual transmission mileage varies.
AutoZone. When it comes to holiday travel, you want a smooth ride.
Get in the zone.
AutoZone knows loss of power and performance and low fuel efficiency can take the fun out of driving. That's why right now at AutoZone, you can save $3 instantly on STP Complete Fuel System Cleaner. It helps clean your entire fuel system, restoring lost power and efficiency, and reducing hard starts, knocks, and pings. See store for restrictions and details. Get your ride purring for your holiday drive. Get to AutoZone today.
AutoZone.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's go to Keith listening to us in Hudsonville, Michigan, listening to us on WOOD out of Grand Rapids. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. With the union jobs to fix the federal buildings, you know, that's going to be, as far as I know, a prevailing wage federal contracts because it'll be a federal contract. And that
will probably be the case.
Well, that's kind of targeting money to, you know, taxpayer money to, you know, high-paying union people when we're not in unions and it's not the best use of our tax money.
So, Kevin, you have a response to that?
Yes, it's targeting money to high-paid workers, but also at the same time, it's actually the unions have raised the wages for non-union people across the country. And that's something that is forgotten.
I have a business, and my people are working, sadly, for an average of $12 an hour, and they're going to be paying these taxes. Their money should be spent to the best effect for them.
And is there a possibility that these people could choose themselves to organize?
Sir...
Listen,
if they don't bail out the car companies, I will assuredly lose my business. But I am not for throwing the people's money until these union concessions. Listen, the numbers don't work.
By the way,
don't work.
But in your view, then you believe that the government in this particular case should be using non-union labor for all of these public jobs?
What do you? Wouldn't that make it a little more
well, you'd be
efficient?
Able to spread it out a little bit further politically. How realistic is that, Dan Proft?
Not realistic at all.
Well,
that's how realistic
you know,
it is.
The reason is that it's not realistic is because the government is afraid of union violence against the non-union contractors.
Well, I think actually the reason it's not realistic is because I think what this year UAW, the lobbying or the political arm has spent $50 million on lobbying and passing money around. So I think the reason it's not realistic has nothing to do with union violence. It has to do with union influence.
Thanks very much for your call. One of the other issues when we're talking about, you know, the economic situation, and in the last hour there was reference to the war on poverty back in 1965, the Johnson administration. And something has happened recently in our home state of Illinois. There's been the appointment of a commission to eliminate poverty. And Michael Golden, you are one of the appointees to that commission. I know you're a very busy guy. When are you going to find the time to eliminate poverty?
Not as busy as that. And can Dan Proft is going to be the first to tell you.
If we invited you back in a couple of months, right. Could we?
How close would you be?
Solved?
I'd be happy to report on that. And thanks for the question, Bruce. The Commission to Eliminate Poverty is getting going in the next month or two. There's a poverty summit for 2 days. The Heartland Alliance has done an enormous amount of research on this problem in Illinois throughout communities, and they're going to be doing more in the coming year. And they were a big reason why this law was passed unanimously by the General Assembly and signed by the governor. And I'm honored that Tom Cross, the House Republican leader, has appointed me to this commission. It's going to be a great learning process. But they're bringing in people not just from the General Assembly, but civilians like myself who work on issues of education, which is clearly my area, post-secondary education, housing, health care, workforce development, all of these things, to come up with a comprehensive economic development plan. And the goal is to cut extreme poverty by 50% in the next 7 years. Now, that was the goal 3-4 months ago before we got into this enormous national financial crisis. So it makes it all the more relevant. And obviously, as you joke, but it's no quick fix. But until we start figuring out how all of these working pieces can come together and get more people, as you say, especially with regard to education, qualified to become self-sufficient, earn a living wage, get health care, pay back into the system in terms of taxes,
I want to come back to that circle that I talked with, in hour number one. Where do you begin such a task? And I come back to, we have too many people who cannot take care of their children. They send them to a school. They take the problems of a home and they bring them to the school. It makes the schools worse. It drags the schools down. But it goes back to individual responsibility.
I guess.
And how does government and how does society improve the personal responsibility that is the foundation of a society that is worth being a member of?
Well, right now, I personally blame the government for destroying families' lives. And one of the ways it happens is through this goofy drug war that we keep pursuing. And the war on drugs right now, you get somebody that has a little bit of dope in their car, and then you take the guy, you throw him in jail, you take the car away from his family. And that car, the girlfriend or mother or whatever in that family may need that car to hold down a job, to get to that job, to support her family because her husband's in jail now. And you've got so many people that are engaging in consensual crimes, crimes that aren't hurting anybody but themselves, and you're putting them in jail. And then we're letting violent criminals go sooner.
But Kevin, that's where you would start? You would start by repealing the drug laws? Is this the way that you're going to end poverty?
But right now, why are these neighborhoods so bad? Probably because you've got the gangs running these neighborhoods. And business doesn't want to invest in these neighborhoods. And you know what? You get rid of the drug war. If the drugs aren't illegal, you don't have the gangs selling the drugs. You don't have the gangs ruling these neighborhoods, destroying these neighborhoods. And these people
live in these neighborhoods. They're on the street corners. They're using or selling the drugs. They're using because they don't have education. They don't have jobs.
Yes.
They don't have jobs because they don't have education. They have poor education because they have fatherless homes. And you keep going back to, let's go back. It happened in the sack. Two people hopped into a sack. They had a child that they should not have had, and from that little moment of sexual excitement, all these problems come out of that. Have I made it more clear?
I'm not sure what a sack is, but
a bed.
Yes,
a bed. We all know what a sack is. I'm talking about that kind of sack.
I feel like I'm on Wheel of Fortune, Bruce. I'd like to solve the puzzle, and the puzzle to eliminate
this is the $500 question
to eliminate poverty. Get a high school diploma. Don't get married before 20. Don't have a kid before 20. Don't commit a crime. If you do those four things, then you have about a 99% chance of never living in poverty.
Run them by one more time. I want to let you respond to each one. Give the first one. We're going to get everybody respond to the first one.
Get a high school diploma.
Get a high school diploma. Everybody agrees that they should do that. Okay? Right, Michael?
Of course.
Okay. Don't get married before 20.
That should be a law.
Well, I'm not saying it's a law, but I'm saying these are
These are Dan's laws.
No, this is sociological data. Don't have a child out of wedlock, and don't commit a crime.
What can we do?
Is that a high bar?
What can we do? What can we do? What can we do to penalize someone who has a child out of wedlock?
Well, first of all,
It used to be a big thing that you know it was a stigma. There's no more stigma to that anymore.
Well, I'm going to answer one of your earlier quite into social engineering right away. What Dan says is absolutely correct. I mean, you can't pass laws to that effect. Those are four things that are absolutely essential to people becoming self-sufficient and being able to earn a living wage and so on and so forth. But going back to your point, the first hour, education comes before, in a lot of people's view and in mine, almost all of these other solutions to the problem of poverty and empowerment and getting that living wage. You can talk about housing and healthcare and so forth and so on down the line and workforce development and workforce alliances, but until students come out of high schools and even before high school, but come out of there with 12th grade reading and math levels to the point where they're either qualified to do a job, especially if they're in career technical trading academies, or qualified to pursue an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree. That until the education problem is solved, whether we're talking about school choice or building schools or post-secondary education and scholarships and student loans, which is a whole other piece of this, but until we solve that problem, none of the other problems are going to matter as much. They're peripheral until people can earn a living wage and become self-sufficient. You want to talk about libertarian, it starts and ends right there.
No, it starts and ends with individual responsibility. I mean,
that's
where it starts and
ends.
That's
a part of it. It doesn't start and end right there. If you don't have schools that are able to teach kids what they need to know by the 12th grade, personal responsibility is not going to solve all of that. The school system has to be efficient,
but
has to be effective.
Isn't it? Of course it does. Speak to Dan's point. Isn't it the quality of the parenting that prepares the child to send them to school?
It's huge.
If you do not have that going for you, mm-hmm. that's the personal response.
Right. It starts there, but it doesn't end right there, Bruce.
Or you're the mother of a child, and you're not taking care of that child and sending them to a school system so they can engage with others who've come from similar families. If that's not happening, the fabric of education and the society is broken.
I don't think anyone would disagree.
Kevin Kozlowski's got a comment,
and I'll fault the government for part of this problem, for all these fatherless children. When the government started paying welfare checks to people that had children out of wedlock, they started subsidizing that activity. And what else happened is when that child was born, that child was no longer given up for adoption, given to a family that would raise it right and teach it right. Instead, the child was raised in a miserable situation.
Look, the idea that – I mean, think about this. In the urban centers, the literacy rate among the African-American population was higher during Jim Crow 50 years ago. It was higher when you had government-sponsored racism than it is today. So you want to talk about the promise of Brown v. Board. You want to talk about early childhood. You want to talk about beautiful new schools that don't have peeling paint. There is something much more fundamental going on. And unless we have and you're right, you can't make laws to legislate good parents. But unless you have the courage to have the conversation.
Yes.
To talk about the stigmatization that doesn't exist anymore that used to and how that impacted culture.
How do we return? How do we add the stigma back into illegal pregnancy? How do we do that? Illegitimate pregnancy. 1-800-723-8229. That's the question. If you can answer that question in 100 words or less, we'll have you on the show. 1-800-723-8229. How do we stamp out illegitimacy?
Vehicular stereotypes are ugly and hurtful. Take the SUV. It says, I'm into strip mining and deforestation, but my real passion is shoveling my life savings into a blast furnace. Or consider the hybrid. It says, I have concern for the environment and a visceral hatred of anything fun. See how hurtful stereotypes are? Sidestep them with a 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper. With the best car fund footprint on the road, it's fun to drive and environmentally responsible. Now get zero down, zero deposit on a 2009 Mini Cooper lease. Go to MiniUSA.com/FS for details. EPA estimate with manual transmission mileage varies.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy. And it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
From Louisville, Kentucky to, Augusta, Maine, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8299. So many cities and so little time to mention them all. Our Democrat tonight is Michael Golden. He is the co-founder of the Illinois Education Foundation. 50 words or less, what do you do?
We empower high school students and continuing education students through scholarships at community colleges to get them their associate's degree, BA degrees, and go to work.
And you have recently been appointed to the Commission to Eliminate Poverty, and you're going to come back and report periodically to our listeners how you've eliminated poverty.
I'd love to, only if Dan's here, too.
Dan Proft is also with us. He is a Republican. He is a political commentator. Heard on our morning show on our flagship station, WLS, Don Wade and Roma. And Kevin Kozlowski is here making his first appearance. He is a libertarian. He is a construction project manager. And also he described himself as once upon a time a Goldwater Republican, but now he's a libertarian, and he ran for state treasurer in the state of Illinois back in 1988. Are you ever going to do it again?
I'm getting the itch again.
Maybe you get the itch. It's very, once it's in the system,
you can't get rid of.
Very, very difficult to get rid of. Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Mary Ann, listening to us on the flagship, WLS. Go ahead, Mary Ann.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, how are you?
I'm fine. Go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. I'd like to talk about something that I think needs to be talked about, public transportation.
Okay.
Needs to be improved. In Chicago, we have like a 19th century system where the trains just go in and out, into the city and out to the suburbs. Well, some people live way south nowadays and way north. Just, we need some, say, monorails to connect these metro lines. And, in fact, there's a monorail system in Oak Brook, or a company I saw it on the Internet. You could build the cars and give the contracts to American automobile producers.
So do you think?
Marianne, in the
long list of things that a president and a president-elect have got to look at, in your view, building monorails is more important than building schools? Is that correct?
At the moment, yeah. Because, like for example, I'm thrilled to have a president that's from a metropolitan area and that he's familiar with metropolitan problems. Say, for example, the tax structure in the metropolitan area. I mean, that has a lot to do with why companies in Detroit have to pay their workers a lot more. What do you think a guy in Kentucky pays for taxes on his house compared to a guy in Michigan?
Yeah, no, it's great to have a president familiar with the problems of metropolitan
sure
people because he's been part of imposing those problems. Because he's been part of imposing those problems in Chicago. Remember, Obama is a Chicago Democrat, and all of those ills that you're complaining about in terms of the quality of public transportation and the size of the tax burden facing metropolitan families was part and parcel of the Obama agenda when he was a politician in Illinois.
Well, hopefully he'll solve it. I mean, DuPage County here, I mean, that's mostly a Republican.
Well, we're going to move on. We're getting a little too local here. Let's go to Jones, listening to us in Chicago on line 7. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Mr. Bruce Dumas, first of all, congratulations. You have a great show going on.
Thank you very much. Spread the word to all your friends.
I'm going to, because you don't know, at this point, you're going to have one of the best shows happening, especially with these gentlemen that are there with you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we're going to do it. I mean, we're going to be solving poverty on this program.
Solve the problems. 20 years Chicago Public Schools, 5 years of ex-military. And I was in the school watching the solution. I became a student guidance counselor, put to work by a great doctor of the schools. And we, problems are, as those gentlemen are talking about, the children, education first, and that gives you better citizens. I gave them guidance. I worked with the students to show them the right ways and the wrong ways. And we put a system together because of all the money that's being blown. You need to put a system together that listens to the children and their problems and the families and their problems. And the one gentleman keeps going back and said, we need to make sure the children have what they need and get rid of the problem, you know, deal with the problem students, and then just restructure.
Now, Jones, let me ask you a couple of specific questions about as a former teacher. When you had a problem child and you reached out to that child's parents or parent, how often did they come into the school to discuss the problem child with you?
Okay, I'm going to answer that question in 2 seconds. I would like to know, I'll call back with my name and number so I can come on your show and come in and discuss this, because this cannot be done in 15 seconds. But what happened, many times the parents did not come. I was one of the exceptional students with the teachers that was brave enough to go to the job, go to the home, and badger and persist until I got a parent there. And when that part didn't work, that's where I became, the doctor chose me to be the counselor, and the parents would come and see me. That would be my primary job each and every day, contact the parents, and we retained one of students that went to the homes, the
truants, delinquents?
The counselor, like the delinquent person. What was he called?
A truant?
We were one of the few schools, we retained a truant officer. And the next morning when that problem students, 2, 3, 4, 5, came back without their parents, came back without notifying the parents, we went to the house. We pursued this, and this is about the only practical way.
What did you find when you got there? When you got to a home where there was a parent, I would assume that you didn't find two parents very often.
No, single parent.
So if you found a single parent, would that single parent acknowledge that there was a problem, or are they too defensive about their child?
You'll see why you need to call me back. The parent was into, like, I don't know anything about it. I wasn't aware of it. They didn't bring the note in. The schools didn't contact the parent, because we put these systems in. There are things you have to put in gear. Now, one of your gentlemen said in regards to ethnic students, I had only one ethnic student, and they were from a foreign country, as you say to her. They were the only students in 18 years that ever wrote me a thank you note for coming to teach me. They were the only students that paid attention, discipline was in order, and they respected us teachers.
Jones, during the break, we were discussing a point, and I want to get your reaction. You are an African-American, is that correct?
That's correct.
My question to you is, in the next 4 years or perhaps 8 years, with the bully pulpit of the presidency, following an 18-month run for the presidency where his personal biography and the introduction of his family is now known around the world,
yes.
In looking at Barack Obama and the potential of Barack Obama, what can he say, what can he do, specifically in this area, to try to solve or make this problem easier and one that can be addressed? What can he be doing other than being a role model to those who come from single-family homes? What else can he be saying or doing that would be helpful in your view?
In my opinion, he could pull me out of retirement and bring me up there and let me give him the input and you know, continue doing what he's doing, but encourage you doing what he's doing and what we need to do, everybody that can do, support him. I encourage parents to come to the students, to the schools, or grandparents to come to the schools. We need that neighborhood involvement. We need a serious, I encourage preachers from the church to visit the schools. I encourage schools that need to remain open after 2:30, after school program, places for these students to go to. We need to listen, to what he's telling us, but the people that can do something, the aldermen that can do something, you hear what I'm saying? This is a whole different thing and out of the bag. Your gentleman there, once again, they said combine the schools with the playgrounds, with the parks. Why have a $100 million park to play ball, et cetera, if you can bring this to the school?
No, I think, Jones, we're going to put you on hold, and I will get your number. We'll put together a panel of teachers some night. But again, that's something that I've talked about for many years on this program, is that really, school should not close at 3:15. The school should be a community center that should be open many, many hours of the day, so then the evening parents can come back. Many of them have got to be re-educated or educated themselves. And let this be an opportunity where they come back in the evening hours and parents are being taught while the youngsters are maybe engaging in their physical education this evening, so that it really becomes a school, becomes a library, it becomes a recreational center, it becomes a center for learning. Most importantly and exclusively, it has to be about learning. But it seems to me that America's schools, if we are going to rebuild, as the president-elect has suggested, if we're going to be rebuilding schools, and he wants to build those schools as part of a public works program to jumpstart this economy, those schools have got to be more than bricks or mortar. They've got to be inspirational, temples, if you will, where people want to go to those areas. And they become a central part of all communities all over the United States. And there's all different levels of participation. That's what's got to be done. Our schools have got to be doing a lot, and I think it's got to be put into a broader context, because we only have a finite number of dollars to spend. I think it's got to be put in the context of asking ourselves, what is a library, what is a rec center, what is an education system, and should we have three separate sectors all going in separate directions? Or should we be building a major center where communities and families can get together, and maybe we can begin to arrest the problems that we're talking about this evening? Thanks very much. We're going to put you on hold. Our producer, Ben Stewart, will get your name and number, and we'll have you on the show in the studio in the next couple of months. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Vehicular stereotypes are ugly and hurtful. Take the SUV. It says, I'm into strip mining and deforestation, but my real passion is shoveling my life savings into a blast furnace. Or consider the hybrid. It says, I have concern for the environment and a visceral hatred of anything fun. See how hurtful stereotypes are. Sidestep them with a 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper. With the best car fund footprint on the road, it's fun to drive and environmentally responsible. Now get zero down, zero deposit on 2009 Mini Cooper lease. Go to MiniUSA.com/FS for details. EPA estimate with manual transmission. Mileage varies.
Reason number 48 to switch to GEICO.
As much as you enjoy the experience, you won't have to go to the post office. We can automatically debit your checking account or even charge your premium to your credit card. It's easy, and you never have to worry about mailing your car insurance premium again. But we must warn you, you won't get to use any postage stamps. I hear they're coming out with some pretty cool designs.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. So let's go to Jennifer, listening to us in Arlington Heights on WLS and Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. Going back to the issue of making illegitimate pregnancy taboo, one of the things that comes to mind is that moral grounding in your value system comes from your faith. And, why aren't these tax dollars going to more voucher programs? I would think that if you'd had more kids in parochial schools, you'd see those numbers go down.
Kevin Kozlowski.
I want to take issue, though, with the fact that a lot of people in this country think that morality has to be grounded in faith. And if you look at Europe, where 90% of those countries are atheists, in many of those countries, they have lower rates of illegitimate pregnancy. They may have pregnancy out of wedlock.
Wait a minute, 90% are atheists?
And some European countries have rates of 90% atheism.
I don't believe that.
And, like the former Soviet Union?
Well,
oh, yeah.
But what the point I'm trying to make is that religion doesn't necessarily own the issue of morality. And some countries have a lot less degrees of fundamentalist faith, and they have actually a lot less illegitimate pregnancy.
Yeah,
but so
I don't think the issues have to be.
We should not be comparing America to Europe. We fail every time we do that.
Well, I mean,
we're very unique here,
but also,
and we are founded on faith. Our country was founded on having we have all these different faiths, but there's so many educational systems that are faith-based, that are can be run much cheaper, and one of the things you don't see when you look at these schools, these kids coming out of parochial schools, you don't see high rates of illegitimate pregnancies. You just don't see it.
So true, but here's the other point. And, I mean, and I agree with you. And you don't, but also you don't see high rates of illegitimacy coming out of some suburban public school districts too. So I think the issue, I mean, faith is an important part of it, but I think the issue is structure. And why don't we have a system at the primary and secondary level like we have at the collegiate level, which is I can take my Pell Grant, I can take my GI Bill money, and I can go to Catholic University, I can go to Indiana, I can go to Illinois, I can go to Notre Dame, I can go wherever I want. The best fit for me, but those schools provide structure, and at least then you're making an informed choice or you have an informed choice to make. And I don't see why primary and secondary school systems in this country are exempt from competition. We believe competition provides better goods and services at lower costs to, in every sector of our economy except our grade schools and high schools for some reason. Makes no sense.
And the problem is that we're counting on a government solution, a big government solution to a very moral problem, and it never works. It just never works.
All right, listen, thank you very much for your call. I want to get a response to our guests about a story that is breaking on the Wall Street Journal website, and that is that the Chicago Tribune Company is preparing for a possible filing of bankruptcy court protection as soon as this week. This is according to people familiar with the case. The Chicago Tribune said they do not comment on rumors or speculation, but again, this obviously would be a devastating story to not only to the Tribune family, but to broadcasting, one of the corporate pillars of the community here in Chicago. Dan, any comment on that?
Government bailout. Look, I mean, you have media companies, print newspapers, some radio stations, local television news. They are going the way of the dodo bird, because they have become as disconnected from the reality of the new economy, the reality of how people consume information, as a lot of other dinosaurs in other sectors that we talked about earlier tonight. So, if the Chicago Sun-Times, for example, went away, or the Chicago Tribune went away, wouldn't matter to me, and it wouldn't matter to a lot of people under the age of 50.
I may be a little more sentimental about the Chicago papers than Dan. I mean, we've seen this coming for a while. We were just talking about the redesign of the Chicago Tribune and a lot of other media companies in the last 10 years that have not caught up with the new types of emerging media and learned how to harness that. And it's a shame, but especially at this point in time, we've been talking for the last couple hours about the economy and about how these major companies are going to impact jobs and consumer spending, and an enormous entity like the Chicago Tribune, especially one of the crown jewels in Chicago, it's terrible. But if they're not able to compete, they're not able to compete. And that's sort of the end of the story right there.
Kevin Kozlowski.
I guess if they do get a bailout, my only question is that going to guarantee that the Cubs will never, ever win a World Series?
No, but they're having difficulty selling the Cubs.
Yeah. Yeah. But
it's
not a technology problem. I mean, the one thing I'll say, the Tribune and the Sun-Times and these other second-tier papers in major urban markets around the country, I do feel bad about the job loss part. But it's not just about them using or not using emerging technology. It's about them, the content they produce. They produce content that is not relevant to the consumers they are trying to appeal to.
Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Dan in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on the education system here in our country.
Yes.
It's basically a partnership between the educators and the parents, and the parents are not holding up their end. You can only hold the individual students to a certain degree of responsibility. They are there to learn. They're developing the tools that they need to, you know, succeed in life and to be responsible. They don't have those yet. It's our job as educators to give those to them. And you can start holding them to more and more responsibility as they get higher up through the system. And in post-secondary, they're on their own. But the problem is these parents are not supporting their kids. And I think the way we need to approach this problem is, how can we hold those parents, you know, accountable? If everyone's entitled to a free and public education, do those who not, you know, take full advantage of that and throw that away, how can we go after them and hold them accountable and hold them responsible? I don't have an answer to that, but I think that's where we need to look.
You pose a good question. We're out of time for this week. In fact, we'll pick up on that. We'll expand the discussion next week as One of the things that we want to be doing every Sunday night is an opportunity to delve into stories that obviously can't be answered in 30-second sound bites or even a two-hour broadcast, but at least discussion, debate, and maybe some new ideas can be put on the table for the president-elect who lives in Chicago and who knows, may be hearing this show from time to time. So maybe our caller Jones, maybe he'll get that job he was looking for. Our thanks this evening to our Democrat, Michael Golden. Michael, thank you very much for being with us. Our Libertarian has been Kevin Kozlowski. Our Republican tonight has been Dan Proft. And thank you all for being with us on this week's edition of Beyond the Beltway. This is a Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and XM Sirius Radio. And our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this show. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Vehicular stereotypes are ugly and hurtful. Take the SUV. It says, I'm into strip mining and deforestation, but my real passion is shoveling my life savings into a blast furnace. Or consider the hybrid. It says, I have concern for the environment and a visceral hatred of anything fun. See how hurtful stereotypes are. Sidestep them with the 37-mile-per-gallon Mini Cooper. With the best car fun footprint on the road, it's fun to drive and environmentally responsible. Now get zero down, zero deposit on a 2009 Mini Cooper lease. Go to MiniUSA.com/FS for details. EPA estimate with manual transmission mileage varies.
Who's always there for you? Your mum? Maybe, yeah, but sometimes she's a bit chatty with you. Oi, when are you going to get a girlfriend business? Now, GEICO, they're always there for you. They have been for over 70 years. They insure over 8 million policyholders, and their customer satisfaction is at 97%. With GEICO service, no wonder it's the third largest automobile insurance company. Your mum might cook better, but everything else, it's a very close call.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Do you suffer from cold sores? Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relieve and find out for yourself if Relieve works really fast for you. Relieve is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relieve now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy. And it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
Tom Castor here, VP of Banquet Foods. Recently, we launched new Banquet Select Recipes frozen meals. At only about $1.50, they've been going fast. Then came the letters. Meg B. says, I made your pot roast meal for my husband. He loved the tender chunks of meat and rich gravy. But when I told him it was only about $1.50, he got into the fetal position and kept saying, it's not possible. Please do something before he's committed. Duly noted, Meg, and thanks for the letter. New Banquet Select Recipes. So good for so little.
AutoZone.
When it comes to holiday travel, you want a smooth ride.
Get in the zone.
AutoZone knows loss of power and performance and low fuel efficiency can take the fun out of driving. That's why right now at AutoZone, you can save $3 instantly on STP Complete Fuel System Cleaner. It helps clean your entire fuel system, restoring lost power and efficiency, and reducing hard starts, knocks, and pings. See store for restrictions and details. Get your ride purring for your holiday drive. Get to AutoZone today.
AutoZone.